Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Body Slam podcast right here at GerWeck.net. That is GerWeck.net. My name is Atlee Green, and I am not here with Shane Daly or Todd Graham. I am here with a very special guest. I'm here with the one.
I am
the
your
only.
Host, Jason Labonte. Thank you very much.
Jason Labonte is here, folks. If you listened to our live Body Slam podcast last week, you heard somebody calling in to the show, and now I have brought him back. Jason, lay it on him.
Well, I had a great time last week. Thank you so much for having me back. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. Got some really good topics, and let's say we hit with a little Hell in the Cell.
Absolutely. Hell in the Cell went off without a hitch or with a few hitches this past Sunday, depending on how you look at it. It's funny, Jason, because normally with the B shows, I really don't get too excited for them, but I'll still watch them. But this is the first B show, if you will, in quite a while where, you know, friends of mine called me up and said, hey, do you want to get together and watch Hell in the Cell? And I was a little intrigued, and we got some buddies, got some food, and we watched the show. Now, Jason, what were your initial thoughts of the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view this past Sunday?
Well, for the first time since the Hell in a Cell concept, as far as being a pay-per-view and not just a match that came out when it actually called for it, there actually were two Hell in a Cell matches that actually deserved to be Hell in a Cell matches. Whether we like to see it again or not, Randy Orton and John Cena certainly has had a rivalry that has gone on long enough that it certainly does. They hate each other. They don't get along. They've been warring for 10-plus years. Yeah, that deserved to be in Hell in a Cell. But you also take what I thought was far more the build, the entertaining part of the build, is that with Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose, Dean Ambrose has actually looks like he hates Dean Ambrose and wants to kick his backside. When was the last – you don't see that kind of feud anymore. Usually the good guy or the person who wants to beat the other one up has to wait for his music to start or before he runs to the ring or some foolish setup. But usually when Rollins is least expecting it, he bolts and no music, no anything. And it's so refreshing and it's so good. And it was deserving of being in the cell, even if the ending was not what I would have preferred.
Oh, we'll definitely get to that, but let's break down the card as a whole. I mean, the show opened with the Intercontinental Championship match, 2 out of 3 falls, Dolph Ziggler versus Cesaro, and it's kind of the rare finish where Dolph Ziggler went over 2 straight falls. The last time I remember seeing that was Starrcade 94, I believe, and it was Dustin Rhodes and Stunning Steve Austin, where Steve Austin went over in 2 straight falls.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time that I saw someone go over twice. I think it happened sometime after that, but it certainly doesn't happen very often. I just wish it wasn't at Cesaro's expense.
Do you believe the reports that Cesaro was booked to lose twice in a row because of the comments he made about in the media in regards to seeing Randy Orton versus John Cena for the millionth time and being sick of it?
I don't think so. They've been so wishy-washy as far as booking Cesaro since he lost the United States Championship, 2-3 years ago? That sadly, it doesn't surprise me that they booked him like they did.
I mean, the way I look at it, WrestleMania was his moment, and he shined bright. And they should have capitalized, and they tried, but it just didn't work for whatever reason. And I don't really believe that they're punishing him per se, because number one, I remember over in the summertime. Before he got hurt, Wade Barrett made similar comments about the John Cena Randy Orton feud, and he wasn't quote punished at all. So I really don't think, you know, he was really being punished, because as you said, you brought up a perfect point. They're very wishy washy on him. They're up and down constantly when it comes to Antonio Cesaro. So I mean, I really don't find much stock into him being punished. You know, like one minute he's hot, next minute he's not, as far as the booking goes.
Now, if you'd have told me after WrestleMania that, leading up to WrestleMania, that Cesaro would be a heel and Jack Swagger would be a babyface, I would have said, I would have called you on it. Because the Cesaro was very hot. That swing was completely, was so over. The crowd was just waiting to get behind him, and they pooped on it.
Oh, I could not agree with you more. I mean, WWE obviously has their reasons for going in a certain creative direction and telling other guys to not do certain moves, but it's going to be interesting to see where Cesaro heads going forward. The next match on the Hell in a Cell card was Brie versus Nikki Bella, and of course Nikki Bella won, and Brie has to be her assistant for the next 30 days. Now, Jason, I had a problem with I thought the match was good. I thought it was really good, but I had a problem with it being a clean finish.
As I predicted last week when we were going over our picks for who we thought was going to win, I wasn't surprised because, you know, as I stated, the babyface, the only time I've ever seen a babyface win a match like this was back when David Von Erich beat Jimmy Jam Garvin. And those vignettes of Garvin out at the ranch were just absolutely were hilarious. But for this one, yeah, I could. So the heels don't cheat really anymore. But then again, there's not many rules left for them to break.
Oh, no, I agree with you on that, Ed. It's just that when you're the babyface going into a match like this, it's if you lose clean and then you have to be the assistant for 30 days, then the way it looks, it goes, hey, well, there's no sympathy because you agreed to the match, you signed the contract, you lost fair and square, you deserve whatever you get. But if you're cheated, if you're robbed and you get shafted in this situation, then their sympathy would be treated like dirt for 30 days. I have no sympathy. As a fan watching this show, I have no sympathy for Brie Bella whatsoever. I don't care how many, you know, macchiato coffees that Nikki will dump over her head. I have no sympathy.
Yeah, and then to take a look at the way that she reacted the night after on Raw, not to totally skip ahead, but there was there wasn't a look of disdain. There wasn't a look of anger. She was fully accepting in her role as the assistant.
Yeah, I mean, not to skip ahead, but I like how she held, Naomi's foot there, you know, but she kind of was hesitant to do that, so I kind of think it's going to go in an interesting direction. But let's go now to the Tag Team Championship match. Golden Stardust retained the Tag Team Championship against the Uso brothers, and I think that was the right call. I think it was right for Golden Stardust to retain the belts. I wouldn't have been mad whatsoever if the Usos ended up leaving Hell in a Cell as the tag champions. I mean, these four have good matches with each other night in and night out, and I mean, I think it's only a matter of time before the Usos, you know, get the belts again. I mean, they're gonna be like the tag team for quite a while.
As long as they can remain healthy, I fully agree. Though my issue, it was yet another fantastic match. These teams they gel very well. As we have seen in numerous six-man tag team matches over the last month. But it's time to let's get some other challengers for the tag straps now, and we'll get back to the Usos. I think it's time though to they both need fresh challenges.
Oh, I couldn't agree with you more. Let's go to the first Hell in a Cell match of the evening. John Cena defeats Randy Orton to become the number one contender for the WWE World Heavyweight title. It's funny because when you think about the two Hell in a Cell matches, Jason, I think everybody going into Hell in a Cell, the show, thought, okay, clearly one Hell in a Cell match is going to be better than the other. And we knew which one we thought was going to be better. Maybe you thought it was, but for my money, John Cena versus Randy Orton was match of the night.
It was a good match, though. One of the things that happened a lot in this match, which I noticed actually, if I were to subtitle Hell in a Cell, I would subtitle it "The Night Finishers Don't Work." how many times did Orton kick out of the AA? How many times did Cena kick out of the RKO? It was just a common thing throughout the night. People were kicking out of finishers left and right. Brie kicked out of the rack attack once. I mean, but for what it was, I have seen every Orton-Cena match. I have seen some horrible Orton-Cena matches. This was a good one. I just, as much as I am so sick and tired of Cena and Orton and would not cry if they were to disappear for 6 months, it was a good match.
Oh, I mean, no one's going to complain. No one's going to disagree that these two are wrestling each other way, way, way too many times. But, again, when the cage started lowering and you saw Cena and you saw Orton, initially, when the bell rang, I thought to myself, you know, mentally, for me, this was the bathroom break match. However, once we started getting into it, I forgot about that. These two, over the course of this match, made me forget that I was so sick of this feud for one more night. I can't remember the last time one of their matches made me do that. And when you go back to the finishers, how there's virtually no finisher anymore, people kicking out everybody's finish. Yes, I totally agree with that. And that's a part of the format. I think whenever you see that John Cena and Randy Orton are going to wrestle each other on a pay-per-view or a big show, you know it's a prerequisite that these two are going to kick out of each other's finishers at least twice. You know, I think Orton should have gone over to have a fresh new challenger for Lesnar, but I understand box office-wise, major appeal-wise, John Cena versus Brock Lesnar on the billboard, you know, does make sense. But, man, when Orton hit the RKO out of the Attitude Adjustment,
that was beautiful.
That was poetry in motion, and that had finished all over. That popped the room. Where I was at my friend's house watching it, that popped the entire room.
Oh, that was, I'm glad they did the replay because I didn't catch it. The camera angle that they used, it's like all of a sudden we had an attitude adjustment and then Cena was down. It's like, what? But when they showed that was just, I heard that Randy Orton has actually been seeing the whole Vine thing, the RKO out of nowhere that has been running the internet, and he has been enjoying watching it, and I think it's actually it's inspired him, because I've noticed the RKOs are getting a lot more creative lately.
Oh, it's funny you mentioned the Vine thing, because I actually watched some of the Vine videos, and you know, some of them were okay, some of them were really creative, and it's funny, because usually when a WWE superstar, you know, catches on, you know, outside of WWE with something like this, WWE doesn't really capitalize on it or really mention it that much, but you figured they would try to capitalize on this momentum in some way, shape, or form because it's Randy Orton, but they have not. And I think if they get a few T-shirts out there, you know, RKO out of nowhere, I think it will make some money.
Oh, I agree. It's the one thing I think that got Diamond Dallas Page over wasn't his wrestling ability. It wasn't his look. It was the Diamond Cutter. He snapped that out of nowhere. I mean, when he won Battle Bowl, he won it with 5 Diamond Cutters out of nowhere, and that got him over. That got the attention of Bischoff. That got the attention of Randy Savage. It was Randy Savage's idea to put that move over. I listened to with Diamond Dallas Page. And he said that when they asked Savage when they came to that Great American Bash match between Savage and Page, they asked him, what do you want for the finish? And he goes, Diamond Cutter, center of the ring. That made Diamond Dallas Page. The RKO is what makes Randy Orton. And I mean, it's just something about that move.
I mean, I'll always say that from in my opinion, you know, DDP does the move a lot better than Randy Orton, just because I like it when the wrestler, whoever does it, holds on with both hands the entire time, where Orton sometimes will just do it one-handed, and I think it looks kind of cheap when he does it with one hand.
I agree.
All right, but let's move on. Let's go to the United States Championship match. You get Sheamus defending the belt against Miz with Damian Miz down in his corner. You know, it cost, I mean, it wasn't going to get much of a reaction, being that it came right off the heels of the Cena or in a Hell in a Cell match. I had no problem with it. It was short, you know, it was sweet. It did what it needed to do. Miz Dow, for my money, was clearly the most entertaining aspect of the match. But at the end of the day, Sheamus retains the U.S. title.
It was what it was. We've seen Sheamus and Miz work several times. It was a decent match. The only thing that really stands out was the YMCA at the end of the match with Sandow. I chuckled.
Oh no, I completely agree with you. But I think one of the big impact moments of this of the card was the next match, the Big Show taking on Rusev with Lana in his corner, and Rusev goes over in the match. He wins the match, and he makes the Big Show tap out with the Accolade. And I was shocked because WWE has, they like to protect the Big Show sometimes because, you know, he's the world's largest athlete. He's over 7 feet tall. He's a big guy. He's the Big Show, and they like to protect him at some point. But I really thought to get Rusev over as a serious heel challenger, you really needed to have him make a statement and beat the Big Show clean with no Mark Henry interference. And I was happy to see that he made Big Show tap out. I think that was the right call. And it's funny because I actually missed it the first time. I missed the tap out the first time. I thought they were doing a referee stoppage, which I thought was kind of lame.
Yeah, I didn't see a tap out. I thought it was a referee stoppage.
And then once they showed us the replay, I was like, oh, okay, the camera barely caught it, but he was tapping out.
Oh, okay, because I didn't either. I must have been either coughing my lungs out. I've been a little under the weather recently, or because I didn't. I mustn't have missed out on the replay because I remember him asking, and then went for the bell.
It was, you could barely see it because once they showed the replay, I actually had to rewind it to see if they were just calling it a tap out. But the way the camera shot it, you could barely see his left hand. I believe it was his left hand that was tapping out. It kind of reminded me of, like, Tank Abbott. Like, whenever he tapped out back in the day, it would always be that stubborn, light, gingerly tap. Like, yeah, get him off me, I'm done. It was kind of like one of those, where it's, instead of a guy just normally tapping, like, oh, let me out. But I think this is means good things for Rusev. I like that they're sticking with Rusev, because in a day and age where there's a lot of stop-and-start pushes, I'm glad that they've still held their guns and the Rusev experiment is still working very well.
Now, one thing I want to point out before the match, the promo that was done in the locker room where Big Show was shadowboxing, getting jazzed up with Mark Henry. I don't know if you noticed this, but when they were talking about the match just before they left, and Big Show said, yeah, when I'm done beating Rusev, we'll go to Silsby, have some barbecue, and then have a good time. Well, Silsby is Mark Henry's home, so when Big Show kind of invited himself over to Silsby for his own for barbecue, you kind of saw Henry's head snap up and the scowl, which would kind of continue on through Monday, was very present.
Wow, I did not notice that. Yeah, I think my cold was probably affecting me. I did not notice that at all.
That actually
makes sense considering what happened on Monday. Not to skip ahead, but yeah, that definitely makes sense.
Yeah, that was one of the things that I kind of noticed. Like one of my favorite all-time heel turns was Paul Orndorff, Hulk Hogan, and all the little subtleties that. I mean, granted, I was a little kid at the time when the turn happened, and I was devastated for weeks. But I've watched that several times over the last few years. You got to see the subtleties, and this was you go back, watch the last few interaction between Big Show and Mark Henry. You'll see Mark Henry with that little quick snap of the eyes, staring, boring holes through Big Show. This has been a slow cook.
It's funny you mentioned Orndorff Hogan heel turn because for a lot of people that was their first heel turn. That was the first time they ever saw a babyface turn heel. And it's funny because I've actually you talk to a lot of people. A lot of people are the impression that was like the first heel turn ever. You know, as far as a babyface turning on their partner. But I totally agree with you. I was pretty much the same way. You know, when I saw that.
Oh yeah, I mean that was just the. When you're a young kid and you still believe, you know, not to pull a Santa Claus reference. And for Orndorff to just, I mean, that clothesline, I look at it now and how awesome that was. But when he raised Hogan's arm and then leveled him, you just don't see that anymore.
Oh, no. And I remember watching the first ever Survivor Series. I believe it was 88 or 87, one of them, from Cleveland, Ohio, and Orndorff was on Hogan's team. I thought for sure he was turning on Hogan again.
Oh, how could Hogan? Also that year, that Survivor Series, I'll never forget this. You had Randy Savage, Jake the Snake Roberts, and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat all on one team. How did that make any sense whatsoever? You had Steamboat who got dropped on his head by a DDT from Jake. You had his larynx destroyed by when Randy Savage dropped the ring bell on his throat, but yet they were also happy to team up. I could have sworn their lamb was sent to slaughter at that moment.
Well, I think in the spirit of Thanksgiving, they put their differences aside and they all wanted to get their hands on the Honky Tonk Man. But that was actually, to correct myself, that was Survivor Series 1987, Cleveland, Ohio. We're kind of getting away from Hell in the Cell, but we'll get to Survivor Series a little bit later as regards to Raw. But the next match on the card was the Divas title. AJ successfully defends the belt against Paige. And I kind of saw it going this way. I mean, when it comes to AJ and Paige, I think it can go either way, and there's really no right or wrong answer to the equation. Fun little match. It wasn't what it was, similar to my take on the U.S. title match. AJ successfully defends, and Paige is one step more even crazier.
Well, what I thought was interesting, especially with what I had learned about AJ in the just before the match, excuse me, AJ Lee has turned down, excuse me, Total Divas. They've asked her to be a part of, to join the cast. She said no. She has no interest in it whatsoever. But Paige, when it returns, at least, I don't know if it's whether it returns or if it's the next season, but Paige is joining the cast. So, really, it looks like that AJ is the only diva. Well, AJ and Emma, and I don't think we'll be seeing Emma in any kind of pushed fashion anytime soon.
Well, I don't think they want Emma stealing any hearts on
Hello
Divas.
I had to.
I couldn't resist.
I think those are the only two who are not on the Total Diva cast. So
I mean,
surprised to see her keep the belt.
I mean, the way I look at it is, I mean, of course, she's married, AJ is married to CM Punk, so when they have to record, I mean, one of the things about a reality show following her every move behind the scenes is her home life, and I don't think they're going to want her to, or they're going to want CM Punk on TV at all, so I think it would be kind of awkward if she was on Total Divas, but she doesn't even want to do it. Even before the whole CM Punk deal, she just didn't want to do it, and now Paige is going to be on the show, so...
I mean, granted,
you know,
this so-called reality show is about as scripted as Hogan knows best.
Oh, no doubt. It's scripted 100%, but they still follow them, you know, behind the scenes, and I think there are some real-ish elements, and I say real-ish, not real. But what actually this past Sunday was Total Divas. It was their mid-season finale, so the season picks up again in January where Paige and Alicia Fox are going to be a part of the show.
Yeah, I know that like one of the things that I had heard recently is that one of the reasons why they're being very good to AJ is the idea that if they ever want to, if the heat ever dies down, because I'm sure that Triple H has a little bit of heat with Punk with over refusing to saying that working him at WrestleMania was not important enough for him. Just shoot at the boss's ego. You know, if they if he ever cools to the point where he asks Punk, you know, do you want to be in the Hall of Fame? Because Punk deserves it, is a definite first ballot Hall of Famer as far as I'm concerned. If you treat AJ like garbage, he'll say no. So to keep any kind of possibility of any kind of return, not that I'm saying that he's going to return, because I certainly don't believe that he will. And I support him 100% in whatever he decides to do. But you've got to play the game. Actually, I think the pun was intended.
I mean, no matter where you slice it, I mean, I think someday, somehow, WWE and CM Punk will do business again, which culminates with CM Punk appearing in a WWE ring, wrestling matches, and all that good stuff. But now, let's get to the main event of the evening. Dean Ambrose versus Seth Rollins, Hell in a Cell. The finish comes where Dean Ambrose is about to put Seth Rollins through cinder blocks, a.k.a. with the curb stomp, similar to what happened to him. Of course, the lights go out, and then
the
lantern
come back on,
appears.
And it's Sabu. Oh, sorry.
Yes. HW Arena, no. The lights go off, they come back on, there's a lantern in the ring, there's a hologram within the lantern, within the aura of the lantern. Bray Wyatt pops out of nowhere, takes out Dean Ambrose, and Seth Rollins gets the pin. Seth Rollins officially wins the match, and afterwards, Bray Wyatt hits Dean Ambrose with Sister Abigail, kneels down the ring, looks up at the sky, and that is how our main event ends. Now, Jason, tell me your thoughts about the match and the finish.
Well, one thing that I thought was severely lacking from this match was Jim Ross. I really think he could have added so much more to this match. The match itself was just phenomenal up until the last 5 minutes. The two of them, they work very well together. I am just not ready to see this feud end. Ambrose is just so good in his role that I think he has a chance to hit Daniel Bryan size. Fan pop people are connecting with him, and you know, it's getting very close to doing damage to it. Rollins, they've changed him up a little bit. He's not so much the cowardly heel that he was, which is good. Nice to see a little backbone. Ric Flair was a cowardly heel, but he wasn't a cowardly heel, if that makes any sense.
No, I know what you're talking about. He's a cowardly heel, but once you put his back against the wall, he will fight back,
right.
And that's what Seth Rollins does.
But up until the point that the lights went out, the match was awesome. It just they work so well together. The spot on the side of the cage, I actually think that cage is higher than the one that Michaels fell off the side of.
Oh, it's a lot higher.
So I think that they fell a little bit. I mean, they didn't fully, but they did fall a greater height, I believe, than what Michaels did from a similar spot. Though it does kind of remind me, the JBL had a good comment back during the Miz match, and when he made a mention on how the Spanish announce table was their stunt double, and then that happened. That just kind of popped me a little bit. But when the lantern showed up, I mean, the hologram was kind of nifty, but you know, it's where was Paul Bearer on? To be honest with you, that was his kind of gimmick. And I don't think that, you got Bray Wyatt, you've got Dean Ambrose, both guys have been on really devastating losing streaks. Neither one of them could really afford another loss and keep their status. I mean, I know that Bray has been hurt big time lately, but I don't like this, I'm sure the matches will be fantastic. Shield versus the Wyatts is a definite year match of the year candidate from back in February. But I just I just don't like this right now.
I mean, I think this is where you and I are going to differ as far as our opinions on this particular match.
How dare
and
you, sir?
The, and the aftermath. Yes, this is where we differ. The match wasn't for me. I think Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins did the very best with what they had to work with. But in the end, I thought it was a very overbooked affair where they focused on more stunts and style than substance. And it's funny because when the cage lowered and this match about to begin, everybody in the living room at my friend's house, at Shane Daly's house, was very excited for this match, including me. And as the cage got to the ground, Shane Daly looked at me and said, "Atlee, this is going to be amazing. There is absolutely no way that this match could suck." And I replied, "No, I said, you are right. There is no way this match could suck." Dramatic pause, and I said, "Well, only in the off chance that they overbook it with a lot of gimmicks. They gimmick the hell out of it." And I think that's exactly what they did. I like how it started off with Dean Ambrose going to the top of the cage and calling out Seth Rollins. And then I like how Seth Rollins was like, "Yeah, I'm not going up there, blah, 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 blah." And I like that. And I thought it was a very strong beginning. But then all of a sudden, he set the Stooges up there. And that was my first, that was my first inkling that, okay, this may be a very gimmicky affair that we're watching. And plus, once you see everybody fighting on top of the cage, you realize how tall that cage is. Because, us longtime fans, everybody had visions of Mick Foley dancing in their head.
Oh, yes.
When these two were fighting on top of the cage. But then you see how much taller that cage is and how much farther a drop it is to the ring, to the floor, to the commentator's table. And right away, there is no safe way. If you're thinking there's going to be a stunt where one or both of these guys fall off the very tippy top of the cage, there's no way that's going to happen. There's no safe way to do it. It's too tall for it to be a safe landing. Just too tall. And then, of course, later on, they take the bump to the table, which is a little higher than Shawn Michaels. But I didn't like it because it was telegraphed so much. It was telegraphed. You could see it coming a mile away. And that's what I didn't like about it. I would have preferred if it happened more out of the blue, or it was kind of more of a surprise. And then, of course, there was a little bit of a halt to the match where the EMTs came out and put them both in the gurney. And actually, that worked a few people. There was a few people in the house I was at, they thought that was it. They thought that was going to be the match. They were a little upset, but that was the finish. Of course, Dean Ambrose proves everybody wrong, gets off the gurney, throws Seth back in the ring, we have our match. And then, of course, later on, Kane hoses Ambrose with the fire extinguisher.
Yeah,
and that made me roll my eyes. I'm like, oh, come on, really? Just let these two do their thing and that's it. And then it came with the finish that we just talked about with the lantern. I will say this. I liked the idea. I liked the idea a lot. It was a very cool idea. Visually, it looked cool, but I didn't like the finish. Not because of, I'm a pure wrestling fan and I have to see a 1-2-3 and nothing else. I didn't like it for one reason. I'm going to actually go to Mick Foley for a second, because Mick Foley, a lot of people did not like this finish. Some people did, some people didn't. It's a very highly debated topic right now. But Mick Foley took to his Twitter account and waited on the finish, stating, and I quote, "Before you get down on the ending to Hell in the Cell, think about the promos. The best is yet to come." Now, far be it for me to disagree with the WWE Hall of Famer, but I am going to disagree. A program between Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose has the potential to be some of the best stuff we've seen in years. But it shouldn't take away from the fact that Rollins versus Ambrose deserved a definitive ending, because instead, basically you got Rollins, he got to get out of jail free card, and obviously Ambrose is going to turn his attention to Bray Wyatt, the man that cost him a shot at revenge. But I think that kind of shabby storytelling suggests that, hey, even though we've been telling you for over a month that Ambrose versus Rollins is the feud that matters, never mind, because what really matters is Bray Wyatt and Dean Ambrose. And I don't like that kind of storytelling where after they make the fans invested in something, they go, oh, well, that doesn't really matter anymore. This is what really matters now. And I really didn't like it.
Yeah, I know. I certainly do see, you know, a lot of your points. I mean, Kane, I hated that. And I can see your point as far as the toys, as JBL called them. But on the other hand, Ambrose was not looking to really defeat Rollins. He was looking to end Rollins. So I can give a little. I'm not a fan of a lot of gimmicks, a lot of toys. But in cases like this where there is a reason, I can give a little. So I didn't mind the weapons as much as you. But yeah, no, I fully see, like, we still need a payoff for the Rollins Ambrose feud, and you know, I hope that we get it.
I mean, this is not the last that we've seen of Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose. I mean, they're going to wrestle each other again. We know it. They're two young guys. They're being pegged as the future of the company. There's no way that they're going to ignore this. They'll be back in the ring with each other again. But that leads us to Monday Night Raw. Well, we're not going to break down every little thing on Monday Night Raw, but we'll just go over the big points from Monday Night Raw. The show opens with the Authority. Triple H comes out. Stephanie comes out. The Stooges come out, Rollins is with them, they do their usual promo, and then, of course, Randy Orton comes out, wants to get in Seth Rollins, Triple H tells him to take the night off, cool down, and out of nowhere, Orton hits the RKO.
RKO out of nowhere.
I loved it, not only because it was RKO out of nowhere, but I think it proves that when Randy Orton is motivated and you give him material that he actually likes and wants to do, and it makes him look like a badass, he is all in, and he's going to give you the best performances. I mean, there have been some matches where you could just tell that guy was so bored in the ring and didn't even care. Like, I think one example is WrestleMania 29 when he wrestled Kane.
Yeah, I mean, Orton is on, as I stated earlier, I'm not a fan of Randy Orton. I'm bored with Randy Orton. Randy Orton could go away for a while, but I enjoyed that spot. He does seem a little more motivated, which means less of a chinlock of doom. And if he's going to start making the RKO exciting again, I'm there.
I mean, I agree with you. I got to correct myself. WrestleMania 28, where he wrestled Kane. But go back to what you said. Yes, Chinlock of Doom is out. There are some rumors before the RKO Vine thing. There were rumors they were turning him babyface. And if they're going to turn him babyface, this is the time. I mean, the internet capitalizing on the popularity with the Vine videos. This is the perfect opportunity. I mean, RKO out of nowhere. And plus, he was very intense. And I think this time around, a babyface Randy Orton could be good, provided, of course, you know, the writers give him something that he likes. They're not going to simply say, go ask Hunter, you know?
Well, Randy Orton, from what I understand, I don't feel this way, is a nice-looking guy. The women go nuts for him. I have a female friend who constantly refers to him as her next ex-husband. And plus he's been there, was it class of 2002, they said. So he's got the longevity, he's got the respect, he's going to be one that is going to be very tough to keep heel.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. The other big news coming out of Raw was the return of Ryback, and not just Ryback in general, but the return of
Feed Me More.
That was a very pleasant surprise, I thought, because before they went off the rails, I mean, Ryback was super over.
Well, I don't know if you've discussed this on previous podcasts before, but Ryback going off the rails was a good percentage his own fault.
Oh, no doubt,
so
no doubt.
I don't, you know, normally if I come, you know, watch like Damian Sandow, who I believe is being misused and abused 6 ways to Sunday for the last year. You know, I feel bad for him. I know he's getting TV time. I know he's working on the shows. But Ryback, you know, he did it himself. so I had no real sympathy for him. But I got to admit, I enjoyed that. I'm not a fan of squash matches. I don't feel it's fair to the guy who has nothing sold. That was one of my things I hated the most. You got a full-grown, about the old 80s enhancement matches. You have a full-grown man, 220-pound man. He punches another guy in the stomach, and there's no reaction. That would always take me out of the believability of the match, even when I was a little kid. But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed Ryback. I like the character. If he can keep his head on his shoulders, if he can not do what he did before, he could. You know, there's a chance they might be able to catch lightning twice.
No, I completely agree with you, Jason, because I think time heals all wounds, and sometimes I think Ryback's trajectory right now proves that sometimes you get a second chance to make a first impression. You really do. And plus, they need stars right now. And I think Ryback, before everything kind of went off the rails, he was the closest they've come to having a new legitimate superstar, you know, since, you know, John Cena. I mean, some people say CM Punk. I disagree to a degree with that, but we can go at that to another time. But I really hope that they take this as seriously as they did the first time, and I really hope that Ryback has learned from his mistakes, and this will be a endeavor that's profitable for all involved, entertaining for all involved. Another big thing that came out of Raw was the announcement of the Survivor Series main events. It's going to be Team Authority versus Team John Cena for the main event, and of course, I've heard some, I've read some columns and some podcasts that have kind of believed that WWE is only doing this particular main event because they really have nothing right now. And that could be true, but as an old school fan, I do like that we're getting a traditional Survivor Series match as the main event.
I'm a fan of the old the team of five, Thrive to Survive, or the team of four to settle the score. I'm a big fan of the elimination matches. I hope that there's more than just the one match. That's an old school Survivor Series match. And if done right, I mean, if let's assume that Dolph Ziggler is on Cena's team, Ziggler could get one heck of a rub from this, a rub that he is in dire need of, thanks to the inconsistency of the push. I mean, just imagine where say John Cena gets disqualified in the first 5 minutes of the match, and Ziggler and Ambrose are the sole survivors. What would that do for their career?
Oh no, I completely agree. I mean, it looks like they may do Ambrose and Wyatt in a singles match. I actually hope they hold off on that and put them in this match somehow, and maybe have another singles match down the road. But it's going to be fun to speculate on who's going to be on whose team, because with the Authority right now, I mean, I think it's safe to say that you're going to have Seth Rollins and Kane on one team, on one team for the Authority. You have Cena and probably Dolph Ziggler as on the other team, and I think they're going to go the route of whose team is Randy Orton going to be on?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the hook as far as like storytelling. Is he going to join Team Cena? Is he going to stick with the Authority? What's Randy Orton going to do? I think that's the direction they're going to go. And I think it'll be interesting, especially as we just talked about the RKO. I mean, it may look like he's going to shake Cena's hand and bam, RKO. I mean, I think that has the potential to be some nifty storytelling, if you ask me.
But
go ahead.
Now, since there are not like a full four or a full five member of the Authority, if Triple H is forced to work the match and Randy Orton snaps an RKO on him?
Very interesting. I mean, I don't think Triple H is going to work the match, but if he does and that is how it happens, I think that's your answer to what they're both doing for WrestleMania.
Oh, yes.
I mean,
Triple H. I mean, there's there's been two rumors for Triple H for WrestleMania. The first I heard was Batista, but he was in this little low-budget movie that really didn't make much. I don't know if you've heard of it. Guardians of the Galaxy. But they say he's got.
You mean that Star Wars thing?
Yes. The one with the talking gerbil.
Oh yes, I remember the gerbil. Oh, dude, that movie was awesome, and I gotta tell you, not to get off topic, but that was a great movie, and Batista was amazing in it. And as soon as that was over, I walked out of the theater saying to myself, Batista, for right now, can write his own ticket to Hollywood, and he ain't coming back to WWE anytime soon, because he was scheduled to come back in August. Not anymore. I mean, he's probably gotten a...
From what I'm understanding, he is currently filming a movie with Robert De Niro.
That's all you need to say. It's like, do I go back to WWE where I don't get anything I was promised once again, or do I work with Robert De Niro? Gee, which one are you going to choose?
I am Groot.
but going back to Raw, I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting development to see how this match plays out. And plus, I mean, being that the Intercontinental Champion, what's his name? Being that Dolph Ziggler hasn't officially joined Team Cena yet, he's been kind of getting beat down, and things happen on SmackDown, if you will. I don't want to spoil it for you, but there's a possibility that they could go the direction where he's like, you know what? F this. I am tired of getting beat up. I just had a conversation in the hallway with you, John Cena, and I'm getting beat up already. Or you might just say, you know what, heck with it, I'm on your team. But I wonder who else they're going to get, and it's going to be interesting to see who they pick.
Well, it certainly could be an interesting to put Ryback in that role. Also, what they could do is that you could also have, going back to the whole, what would make for a good authority? Mark Henry.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you can easily throw. I mean, I don't want to see another Big Show, Mark Henry one-on-one match. I love Mark Henry as a heel. Absolutely love the Hall of Pain. But I don't want to see these two in a one-on-one match. They're just not good matches at all. And I think if you put them on the opposite ends of a tag team match like this, I really think it highlights their attributes, hides their weaknesses, and adds to the overall package of a traditional Survivor Series main event.
Did you see how easily he put Big Show in the Hall of Pain.
World's strongest man.
You and I know well as far as how one can help the other out, but I don't think he needed help.
No, he did not.
He had him up and he snapped him down. Dude, I was scared.
I mean, I mentioned this last time on the podcast, but I saw Mark Henry at Calhoun's one day, and we went there. It was Survivor Series. And after the show, it was in Boston, we all went to Calhoun's, and we saw the wrestlers, and, you know, there's some impressive-sized guys there, but Mark Henry looked like a bear that was on the hunt, and I was scared to death.
Somebody get their wig split?
He did not even look at me. He just looked by me, and I was just like, this is a man you do not trifle with.
There is one thing you say to
all.
A man like that, sir.
Sir, and how can I help you?
Exactly.
Or just step out of the way.
Yes, sir, and just get out of the way.
Now, Jason, let's talk about the main event for Raw, Seth Rollins versus John Cena. I actually went to sleep right before this match started, not because it was boring or anything. I just had to get to bed. I was working early in the morning. I have not watched it yet, but a few people have told me that this was a very good match. Did you catch it at all?
I did catch it. It was good. It wasn't atypical Cena. I mean, it wasn't. I think Cena personally needs to go back and get a hold of like about 6 hours of Hulk Hogan 1980s matches, because Cena really needs to learn how to sell. He needs to show, like, Hulk Hogan was not a good wrestler. He was not a great technician, et cetera, et cetera. Hulk Hogan. But yet Hulk Hogan would have the largest reactions of the night. Why? Because he got decimated. Every single match, he got decimated until that very spot when he started to Hulk up and the crowd got right into it. Cena needs to get beat up. He needs
Jason,
to sell. He need and they just.
Jason, you and I could I could do a podcast, like a 2-hour podcast on how nobody sells anymore. That infuriates me. Like nobody sells, or if they sell, it's a very quick ow, and then they just lay there. I could go off on a tangent all night long about how people need to sell. And so it's a lost art. I mean, it really is. I don't know why they don't focus on it more, because that just adds to the drama of a match. I mean, just look at it. Or just watch Ricky Steamboat sell.
Oh yeah.
I mean, even Randy Savage sell. I mean,
watch
the list
Ricky
goes
Martin.
On and on. You know, even in a heel perspective, even D-Von Dudley.
Well, go,
that guy can sell.
Go back. Let's go back for Ricky Morton, the ultimate babyface.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the list goes on and on, but it's a lost art form. It really is.
But
again, I don't want to go on a tangent because we could go off on that all night.
I mean, I watched the match. I kind of zoned in and out because I was exhausted. I mean, it was better. It was better than a normal Cena match, but it was I would have liked to have had Rollins win instead of a Schmoz or what have you. I really think that, I mean, Cena needs to put some people over. And I know it's not his fault. It's what he's told to do. But they need to have him put people over. Bray Wyatt, he should have put Bray Wyatt over at WrestleMania. I mean, what he did for Brock Lesnar, he should do more often. I'm not saying that he needs to get as beaten as badly as Brock Lesnar beat him at SummerSlam, but he needs to put people over. And it seems that the only people who put other people over are the Intercontinental and U.S. champions. They seem,
you know, the guys who shouldn't be putting anybody
exactly.
over.
Exactly. And it's just one of the things that has me so frustrated as a long-term wrestling fan that there's nothing new. It's what keeps Cena as stale as Cena is right now.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is, I mean, as a whole, I believe the WWE product, they're spinning their wheels right now on all levels. I mean, maybe not so much the business where they're making deals with sponsors and Susan G. Coleman and whatnot, but I think as far as the creative and what they're giving the fans, I really think creatively they're spinning their wheels. And, I mean, we can go into this a little, at another time, but I think that when they decide to when they finally make the call that, hey, Cena's no longer our guy and, you know, Wrestler X is now our guy, I mean, depending on how that goes, I think it's going to be, you know, a good thing and a bad thing, depending on the situation. But again, we'll go into that later. Well,
Cena has recently filmed two movies, two of which that will be out next year. So it could very well that he's starting to bring it via satellite, if you will. He may be coming to that part of his career. I mean, granted, one of the movies that he's in is going to be absolutely decimated in the theaters because it,
I was going to mention that,
it releases the same day as Star Wars Episode 7.
You know what's funny? Three movies have already moved off of that December 18th. You know what we're talking about, folks? Star Wars Episode 7 is opening on December 18th, 2015, the same day as John Cena's movie. Now, it's funny because three Hollywood movies that were scheduled to open on December 18th have already said, screw this, I'm not battling the Force. So they've moved their dates. The third Angel and Demons movie with Tom Hanks, they moved off that date. The World of Warcraft movie moved off that date. And some other, dramedy, if you will, moved. I can't remember the name of it, but they moved off that date. So three movies have already said, yeah, I'm not releasing my movie on December 18th. So John Cena may be putting over Obi-Wan Kenobi or something, you know, if you know what I mean. He's putting
no
over. He has no choice. I mean, I don't care if it's Amy Schumer or Tina Fey. I don't care. John Cena is not going over on December 18th, 2015.
He's putting over Han Solo and Chewbacca. There's just no question about that.
Absolutely. But let's go through TNA for a little bit. TNA Impact. We said they filmed the show in September, aired last night on Spike TV. I was a big fan of the main events. Loved it. I could talk about, you know, this match all night. I'm not going to, but I could. I liked this match so much, Jason, that as soon as it was over, I rewound it on my DVR and watched it again. I was beyond impressed. And the thing is, as we talked about this a little bit off the air, but Bobby Roode is truly one of the best wrestlers in the world right now. I mean, he is amazing. And you got to give props also to Bobby Lashley, because I have never been a fan of Bobby Lashley's work as a wrestler. There's never impressive sight, very good athlete, but his, you know, work leaves a lot to be desired. But ever since they put the TNA title on him,
He's been inspired.
He's been great, and he's been getting better and better. I like this match with Austin Aries. I like this match with Jeff Hardy. I like this first match with Bobby Roode, and this match was awesome. They were both amazing. And I mean, there were a few too many ref bumps for my taste, but it's a TV show. You have to add drama to it. I mean, it's not a big problem. Not even a problem at all, just my opinion. But, we talked earlier about how finishers are pretty much dead. I love matches. Yeah, I love it when the win comes out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. I
loved
how perfect ending.
When Lashley went for the sunset flip, Robert Roode ducked down, hooked his legs, 1, 2, 3. I loved it because I did not expect it to end that way. I love it when wrestling matches can end out of nowhere.
Yeah, I expected it. I read what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen. I didn't read how it was going to happen. I fully expected him to hit that AA into neckbreaker or whatever that move is.
The Roode bomb.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that move. And beat him clean 1, 2, 3. Especially after hitting his finish on the floor, on the steel, on the rampway. I'm sorry, that's his finish. That should have crippled him. But anyway,
that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. I did not think about that.
You know, to have virtually the Wembley, the Bret Hart Bulldog Wembley finish was, I loved that finish back in 92. I loved it here. The right guy went over, I think. Bobby Roode, Bobby Roode and James Storm are two of my all-time favorites in TNA, and I think what they're doing with James Storm right now is abysmal. I do not like this. I think they definitely missed they missed the boat on him. He could have been a big world champion, especially when they hotshotted it to him as a surprise that day after Bound for Glory a few years ago, and then they should have had him regain it the year later at Lockdown. But if I can't have him, I'd rather have Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode, he connects with the crowd, whether it's a heel or a babyface. He always gets a good reaction, and he's just a damn good worker.
Oh, no, agreed. I mean, across the board. I mean, and the thing is, the reason I kind of like this is the matches, because there aren't that many shows left. I mean, with TNA, we talked about this last week. I mean, you have November 6th, you have November 5th, you have November 12th, you have November 19th,
and then
the rest of the year, they're all taped shows. Now, if TNA cannot get a TV deal, and these are truly the last days of TNA, not to be the dead horse, but I think the right guy is the champion. Because if you're going to wrap up TNA's story in a nice little bow, and you want to kind of give TNA a happily ever after, you know, I think Bobby Roode potentially being your last world champion is, the way to go out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a homegrown talent. He's really the best they've got. The last couple champions, like Eric Young, I don't know what possessed them to put the belt on him.
Daniel Bryan.
Oh.
That's exactly what it was.
You cannot compare the two.
No, you can't. But that's exactly what happened. And the thing is, when that happened too, not to go off topic, but when that happened, That is what told me that, okay, Vince Russo is back. I knew it right away.
That match was just a fantastic match. Bobby Lashley, unlike his MMA, his wrestling he's been wrestling very well. I look forward. I mean, they've got it. I don't remember. I haven't read. It's been so long since I've read the what's coming up. I don't remember if Lashley Rude 3 is coming up, but I hope it is because I want to see it.
Oh no, of course. I mean, I don't want to spoil it for anybody. I don't know myself, so I'm not gonna look it up here. But Lashley, I mean, he's still juggling MMA and pro wrestling right now. I mean, he was actually successful in his fight on Friday for Bellator MMA, and the biggest thing for MMA as far as Lashley goes is, I think this fight needed to make a statement as far as where Bobby Lashley was at. And even though he won and he was dominant for the most part, it really didn't answer any questions because you could tell they're trying to justify him getting a world title shot in this next fight. I still think he's a few fights away. But I think personally this fight, if you watched it, he got lucky. He got lucky because after the only reason he was able to get Carl Edgerton to the ground because Carl Edgerton slipped while trying to throw him, and then Bobby Lashley pounded on him 19 unanswered punches, and the referee finally called it, and Bobby Lashley won. But also at the same time, when Lashley couldn't get him down, and they were against the cage, Carl Edgerton started throwing bombs. He missed, but Lashley looked very uncomfortable, and that was the thing. He looked so uncomfortable on his feet. And if he cannot do anything with his wrestling, he is in trouble.
Mm.
Did you get to see the fight?
No, I didn't. I heard it lasted about 90 seconds, though.
Yeah, it wasn't long. I mean, it went about 30 seconds. He got kneed in the groin, and he didn't take any of his time off. He was allowed 5 minutes, but he didn't take it. And then they actually, what was weird was, instead of starting him in the position against the cage, he had a dominant position against the cage, but instead of putting him back in that position, they made both fighters start in the center of the cage again on their feet.
Really?
So I thought that was a little weird because that, you know, it's kind of like Bobby Lashley is the one that got the shot to the groin. I don't know why he was, you know, the rules kind of didn't work in his favor. But in the end, Bobby Lashley won. You know, hopefully he can improve on his stand-up and when he starts fighting the upper echelon heavyweights. But, you know, things are looking up for him. Things don't appear to be looking up for one Daniel Bryan, though.
Yes, I was actually just about to mention that. From what I understand, Daniel Bryan has finally relented on getting surgery on his arm, on his shoulder. The rehab that he tried was unsuccessful. He still has numbness in his arm. And there was just no way to avoid it. And as a result, it could add at least another 6 months to his recovery and to any potential return as an in-ring competitor.
I mean, I think in one aspect, this is going to help him in a way because I think by the time he's able to come back, if he can come back, all of his nagging injuries should be healed. You know, but at the same time, I mean, one of the things that makes Daniel Bryan who he is his in-ring style. And once he comes back, between the neck and the elbow and everything else in between, he's going to have to tone that down quite a bit.
Well, for one thing, that diving headbutt, from what I understand, can cause, like, from what I understand, when Chris Benoit had his neck surgery, a lot of the damage was done from that diving headbutt, and Daniel Bryan does a similar move. So you got to think that you got to scratch that off the list.
Oh yeah, oh absolutely. Plus, Daniel Bryan being a smaller guy, when he's taking moves, he gets thrown around a lot because the illusion of him getting tossed around by a bigger guy, it's fun because hey, Yes, he's a main eventer guy, but still, he's a smaller guy, so he's going to be putting more power moves.
Oh, who doesn't like watching Rey Mysterio getting thrown around by the Big Show?
Oh, no, of course not. But what I'm saying is, I mean, they're going to have to be very careful on what they do if they really want him to be around for a while. If he wants to be around for a while, I mean, he's going to have to tone down his style considerably. And the thing is, Daniel Bryan is a super tough guy. He really is.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He likes to fight through the pain, fight through the anguish, and give the fans their money's worth. And the thing is, though, he's a smart guy, too. So I hope he's able to realize that, hey, I'm going to have to tone down this style, you know, if I want to have a long career on top.
And that's assuming that they let him back on top.
Yeah, that's the other thing, because if they do this Roman Reigns deal or Dean Ambrose or somebody else, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, he could not be back on top, or he may just be in the mid card again. Who knows? I mean, it is not looking good for him being on top. It's out of sight, out of mind. You know, it's really just not looking good. And plus, I mean, him delaying surgery for this long, I mean, it's a possibility that things could be worse for him.
There's a good chance that he may be done.
There is a chance.
There's nothing official. The surgery hasn't happened yet. There's no saying what. But with the severity, I mean, you got to think, there's nerve damage going on here. If he's saying that he's losing feeling in his hands, in his arms, you're done. There's just so much. You can't do a move where you've got to, just say that you've got a guy lifted up for a body slam and you lose feeling in your arm, you're dropping him. And we don't need another draws.
You know, and plus, I mean, I talked about this on a previous episode of this podcast, which you can hear right at Gerwick.net. You and I both know this. When you're taking just regular bumps from a body slam, from just being punched, you know, suplex, you slap your arms out.
Yep.
You slap your arms out. And that's a lot of pressure going on your shoulder and your elbows.
Oh, it is. Everyone in who goes to learn to bump is that you learn to land on the square of your back, on your shoulder blades. And that's a lot of impact on that one section.
And being that he's a babyface that takes more bumps than most, he's going to be bumping around quite a bit. So he's going to have to make, we can say it all day, he's going to have to make some adjustments.
Oh, yeah.
But best of luck to him. I mean, here's the other thing. I mean, this is going into what-if scenario with Daniel Bryan, but 99%, every other wrestler besides Daniel Bryan, they get injured, they don't even think about rehab. They don't even think about avoiding surgery. They get surgery right away, then rehab the injury so they can come back. Daniel Bryan's the kind of guy that's like, look, you know, as much as I love professional wrestling, I want to rehab first. I want to do this naturally, whatever, because I want to be able to walk when I'm retired. I want to be able to play with my kids when I'm retired. I want to be able to have a mobile and healthy lifestyle when I am retired. And so a lot of people, there's probably some resentment from some people in the company, like officials, that are like, man, why did he just get surgery? Why do you have to try to rehab it first? Why do you have to try this holistic approach?
Well,
so the question becomes, you put him on top again, he gets hurt again. Does he go through surgery, or do you have to say, well, now we got to wait and see if this holistic approach works, then he gets surgery? So, because if he just got straight up surgery, he might have been back a lot sooner. But then again, when you're losing feeling in your arm, that's not a good sign either way.
Yeah, I mean, it could be... this could be a case. I mean, he goes, he has the neck surgery, and then the arm goes. He could get the arm surgery. They could find something else. From what I've heard, I mean, his Japan matches were very, very physical. His Ring of Honor matches were beyond physical. He is a very physical professional wrestler. He puts a lot of abuse on his body. Plus, he's usually, as we stated. He's generally the smaller guy. So he's getting slammed. If you get slammed by the Big Show, I'm sure he does his best to protect you, but you go down from a far distance and I'm sorry, being slammed in a wrestling ring hurts.
That it does. That it does. I mean, plus, he's not, I mean, just not only a small guy in stature, but he's not a big guy. There's not much muscle on him, you know? So, I mean, he's getting bruised easier than most.
Oh, yeah.
And he's very fast. He runs up and down all the time. So, I mean, he is, I mean, he's, again, you know, he's a smart guy, too. So, I as I said earlier, so I think he realizes this, and I think he's going to, you know, make the adjustments necessary to come back. If he's able to come back, I mean, fingers crossed with Daniel Bryan. But let's talk about now the main event of the evening. The WWE had their conference call, and the big thing was, what are the WWE Network numbers? Everybody wants to know, how many subscribers does WWE Network have? Now, it turns out that the WWE increased their buys. The 31,000 buys were increased, so they're at 731,000 buys.
Now, that does not include the international, does it?
That does include international.
So they opened it up the entire world, and they only gained 30,000?
31,000.
Ouch.
But here's the thing, though. 28,000 of these buys were international in the 130 countries they opened up the network in. 170 countries. They made the network available in 170 countries, and they ordered, and it increased to 731,000 buys, and 28,000 of those buys were from the other 170 countries, and then 2000, 2001, you know, those 2,000, 3,000 buys were from the States. So, you know, it's a good thing they rolled this out internationally, because if they did not roll this out to 170 countries, that number would have been horrible.
Well, you've also got to think, you know, you got to wonder how many people, because since the last conference call, we've had our first 6 months commitment conclude. So how many people did not return? We saw an increase. But is that an increase of – is that a complete 100% increase of 30,000, or is that what is left after so many people left the day that John Cena regained the WWE Championship?
Well, it's good that you brought that up, because they have done away with the six-month commitment.
Yes,
they
as of done, December – It is a month-by-month basis, which I honestly think is not a good idea. Especially, I'm looking at it in a business point of view. If I just want to get 1 month, I love the Royal Rumble. It's my favorite, one of my favorite matches of the year. So come January 1st, I sign up for a month. I get my Royal Rumble, I pay $10. I just save myself $40-some-odd, and plus if I feel like it and I have time, then I can go take a look at the other stuff that, you know, their library of stuff. That's great. WrestleMania, $9.99 for that 1 month. Boom, it's done. I got a $70 pay-per-view for $10. Does that really protect them? Will that really garner long-term money in the long run?
I think it will in the long run, because WWE is trying to get ahead of the curve. I mean, right now, it's still people predominantly use cable TV or satellite television to watch, you know, on-air content, but it is moving to the streaming service very fast. I mean, a poll was recently done where a lot of people said the reason why they have not gotten rid of cable yet, which is the two reasons, HBO and ESPN. And HBO already announced they're doing their own streaming service in 2015, which is going to be outside of cable. You don't need cable to get it. It's going to be $9.99, $12.99 a month, and you can just watch HBO live stream and everything else.
There's your Game of Thrones.
Exactly. So, I mean, a lot of people are going to be cutting the cord, if you will, when that goes live. And the other stations are following suit. CBS, ABC are following suit. And, I mean, slowly but surely, how we watch on-air content is going to be going toward the streaming services, you know, like Kindle Fire TV, like Roku, like Apple TV. And WWE wants to be there. I mean, even though they're struggling right now, they still want to be there, so that way when it becomes the norm, not, you know, the special, but it becomes the norm, they're already ahead of the curve. So I think, you know, in the long run, this is going to work out for them. Plus, I mean, they were comparing themselves to Netflix quite a bit, saying, oh, we're just like Netflix, we're just like Hulu. Sometimes they even said, we're better than Netflix, which was kind of dumb of them to say. But we get to that a little bit later. The thing is, though, a lot of people that I talked to really didn't like the $6.99 commitment. Plus, it was easy enough to kind of get out of it anyway. Because with, like, Netflix, there's no six-month commitment. With Hulu, there's no six-month commitment. With UFC Fight Pass, there's no six-month commitment. So I think they're following suit with the rest of the market. So now they have something else in common. Makes it more enticing. But also, when they were doing the $12.99 a month, for if you just wanted one single month, they had 23,000 subscribers that were doing the cancel anytime at $12.99 a month. So I mean, that was interesting.
Oh, wow.
So basically, they kind of, my numbers, 31,000 new subscribers. Of the new subscribers, 28,000 were international in 170 countries, and 3,000 were from the U.S. So that makes us 731,000 subscribers total. Again, not where they should be right now, but I think they're still moving in a good direction.
I mean, there's a lot about, I mean, the network. I mean, for old school fans like us, like you and I mean, to be able to gain access to, I mean, to the older programs, I mean, just the old house shows, the Madison Square Garden show. I mean, just the other day, I had about 15 minutes that I had nothing to, that I was waiting for another show to start. So I went on to old school and I watched the very first Hulk Hogan versus Ric Flair match from Madison Square Garden. To have that access, it is this. I would right now, other than changing the search tool, which is very limiting and doesn't give you as many results as it really should. I love the network. I wish there was at least another 12 hours in a day.
I mean, the way I look at the network, I mean, actually, Frank D. and Steve Gerwig on the Gerwig Report podcast, they actually have indicated on one of their recent episodes that they both stopped getting the network because they felt that what they wanted was not on there. And, you know, I can agree with that because one of the things I've always said is that you need to get, like, every piece of footage that was filmed the Attitude Era. That needs to be on there ASAP. That should have been on there from Jump Street. And I know there's other things, like with rights issues, you also have to, you know, dub the music over a little bit. Like when I watch the old hardcore TVs from ECW, it's always just like, oh, man, when you hear that dubbed over, you know, studio theme instead of, like, the actual music that they used.
Yeah, well, that's a rights thing. That's something that they
It is, but if you're trying to reminisce back to, you know, the old days, like how cool it was to hear New Jack come out to, you know, that song, and then boom, they just do this generic rap song. I was like, oh, really? Again, legally, they have no choice, but it is one of those things. Well, I do love that they aired the first 100 episodes of Nitro, the first 100 hours of Money Nitro, because I loved Money Nitro from 1995, 96, 97, 98. I loved Monday Nitro. Absolutely loved it.
Oh, I miss Nitro. I mean, as bad as it got, as much as Bischoff giving away spoilers irritated the hell out of me. And yes, Mick Foley did put backsides every 18 inches. Thank you. I miss Nitro.
You know what's funny too, but when Bischoff mentioned the Eric Bischoff thing, you would go, when he would give, the first time I actually heard him give away the results for Raw was during the Raw Bowl. Do you remember the Raw Bowl?
Yes.
When the ring looked like a football stadium, like a football field, and like all the wrestlers that were dressed up in like football players or football jerseys.
Yeah, and
I remember
Billy Dunn with his half football jersey.
Exactly. And I remember Eric during the Eddie Guerrero match, Eric Bischoff goes, "Oh, don't worry about changing to the other channel. With the Raw Bowl, the Smoking Guns want it. Don't worry about it." And I was like, "What? Really?" And I, as a fan who didn't have internet access, who didn't know what was going on, I didn't even know the shows were taped back then. I just thought it was live every Monday. So I was thinking to myself, how does he know the Smoking Guns are going to win? So I actually flipped back to Raw just to see if he was right. And then he was. And then he, a few more times he would give away the results. And again, I would flip back and see if he was right. And then eventually, and of course, he always was. But that was before I even knew that the shows were taped.
Yeah, at that point, I was subscribing to the Pro Wrestling Torch. So I was getting taping results of let's see, they would tape on Monday. I think I got the newsletter about it every Wednesday or Thursday. So I knew that I knew about the tapings, but I mean I don't know. I thought that was pretty low, but it's Bischoff.
Of course. I mean, with the whole network deal though, I mean, I'm still a network subscriber. I've been happy about it. But the thing is, the one thing I don't do with the network is I don't watch the live stream. Unless it's NXT or a pay-per-view, I don't watch the live stream. Because the way I look at it, okay, even though the live stream was cool, it's going to be on demand. I can watch it whenever I want, and that's what I do. I mean, I really think that if they're looking to save money, maybe they should consider not doing the live stream. But what do you think about that, Jason?
Well, the live stream, back during the summer, when there really wasn't much in the way of TV on, I mean, I watched Legends House. I enjoyed Legends House. I watched NXT, and of course the pay-per-views. So I would watch the live stream for that. But I mean, if they're not going to fix the live stream, because I recently bought this fantastic 46-inch HD TV. And I got that thing hooked up to my PlayStation 3 and my PlayStation 4, and it looked absolutely fantastic. Right in the middle of Hell in a Cell, I swear it went to analog. It was certainly not HD. It went to digital, and it stayed there. And it looked absolutely horrific on this wonderfully new TV. They've got to fix the stream. Never mind the fact that there was a lot of buffering and freezing throughout the pay-per-view. If they're not going to fix it, then yeah, I agree. They should ditch it except for the odd specials.
I mean, I agree with you 100%, Jason, because one of the things they were doing on Raw as well as it did on the pay-per-view was that they basically made fun of the fans who bought it on pay-per-view $54.95, because they basically said, hey, if you bought this, if you're watching this on pay-per-view, you bought this for almost $60, where if you're watching it on the network, you're only paying $9.99. And the difference between the network and pay-per-view, even though besides the price difference, is the fact that when you order it on your pay-per-view provider or satellite provider, there are no buffing issues at all.
Yeah.
There are no streaming issues. You're getting a steady, crystal clear HD stream picture and sound for 3 hours straight. And if the network keeps having these buffing issues going to analog, they could lose consumer confidence rather quickly.
I mean, of course, I don't like the fact that they're making fun of people who are giving them more money. give them an extra $45 as opposed to the $9.99. That seems a little ridiculous, but
I agree with you, Jason. Because if this network ultimately fails, they got to kiss a lot of ass to get back on in the good graces of pay per view and satellite. They really do.
Yeah.
Because you got to think about this. I mean, pay per view has been a staple with cable television and satellite television for a while now, for almost 30 years. And one of the big things that, besides movies, that makes a lot of money for pay-per-view are the big boxing matches, the big UFC fights, and professional wrestling.
Let's go back to the wrestling classic back in 1985. That was the very first wrestling pay-per-view, and that was when pay-per-view was in its infancy, and WWF basically carried pay-per-view on their back for many, many years.
Oh, no, I agree. I mean, that was their first pay-per-view, November 7, 1985, for the Rosemont Horizon in Illinois. JYD won the tournament. I mean, the thing is, though, because now, this out of all the pay-per-view, you got boxing, you got UFC, and WWE, those are the three big pay-per-view event providers when it comes to content. But here's the thing. Boxing really hasn't made any moves as far as trying to get out of the pay-per-view business. I mean, in fact, they thrive on pay-per-view. WWE is clearly trying to get out of the pay-per-view business because they want to be in the streaming business like everybody else is, right, where it looks like premium content is heading. Then you get the UFC, who has Fight Pass, and they're airing a lot of their events exclusively on Fight Pass, but not their pay-per-views. But UFC has stated time and time again, they despise the fact that they have to give half of the money they make on a pay-per-view to the satellite providers. They hate that. And if they ever get to a point where more people are buying their pay-per-views online, or like with the apps like through Xbox One or PlayStation 4 instead of the cable providers, they'll do the same thing WWE is doing.
Oh, if you don't think that Dana White is not watching the development and everything of the WWE Network, then you're out of it. He is certainly watching this very, very closely. It wouldn't surprise me that within the next 5 years, if we don't, I'd be very surprised if we don't see a UFC Network in a similar way.
I mean, Fight Pass as well, and it is very similar to WWE Network. The only difference is there's no continuous live stream unless there's an event. Unless they have one of their events from Dublin or Toronto or whatnot, unless it's an actual fight card, that was the only time there's live streaming content. But you can watch every fight from the UFC, from Pride, from WEC, Affliction, you name it, you can watch it. And actually, I like it for the UFC fights because you could actually watch it from the perspective of the blue corner or the red corner.
Well,
so they've actually added some elements to the fights as well.
Well, I mean, I got to admit, I saw an announcement from the Fight Pass that even is making me consider purchasing it or looking into it anyway. The fact that they announced that they are getting their own season of Ultimate Fighter and Anderson Silva is one of the trainers.
Oh, yeah, and Shogun Rua is going to be the other trainer. It's going to be very interesting. And you have to go on a complete UFC, you know, tangent, but it does relate to WWE Network because 2 years ago, three years ago, when Brock Lesnar fought Aleister Overeem in his retirement fight. That was the first UFC or the second UFC that was going to be provided on Xbox, on the Xbox 360, and a lot of people paid Xbox, you know, to watch it through Xbox, but there was so many buffering issues, so many streaming issues that people couldn't watch it, and then UFC offered all them a refund. And they lost consumer confidence for quite some time as far as how many people were buying events through the Xbox 360. But, and again, if that would have worked, that's all, the UFC keeps all of that money.
Oh, yes.
They don't split it with the cable company or anything. And what's great about that is, I think if WWE might be doing something like that down the line, because right now they've booked themselves into a corner. They literally cannot raise the price of this network. I mean, with the whole $9.99, they can't change the price. I mean, they can't all of a sudden say, oh, now it's $10.99. You know, not for a couple of years, in my opinion. But I think they're going to get to a point where you pay for the network, you pay your $9.99, but then they're going to start charging a little extra. Like, okay, now if you want to see WrestleMania, you got to pay an extra $10 for that 1 month.
Well, they've talked about starting ads, outside advertisements during the programs.
I knew that was coming. From the moment that network was announced, I said to myself, they're going to do that eventually. And it's smart. They get some additional revenue. I have no problem with that whatsoever.
I don't have a – I mean, as long as they keep to what they say and don't have the commercials in the middle, like I don't – like it really annoyed me when I was watching a pay-per-view, an actual pay-per-view, not on the network, but a cable pay-per-view, and all of a sudden there's a Totino's ad right in the middle of something I just paid $54.99, or at least part of, since I would generally split it with my friends. And there's a Totino's ad that I just saw on my regular TV program not 2 hours before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it during the live stream in between shows. I think that's a good thing. But I really hope it doesn't get to the point where it's kind of like Hulu, where if you watch TV shows through Hulu, there'll be no commercial. Sometimes there'll be one commercial, two commercials, or three commercials. The max you'll get is three commercials. And they have a little indicator in the upper right-hand screen that tells you, like, okay, one of three. And it will tell you how long the commercials are going to be. But the most you'll get is three, which is a lot less than what you get with regular TV. So it's still pretty good. But I would be a little disappointed, you know, if I'm watching, if I decide, hey, you know what, I'm going to check out In Your House Mind Games, watch a little Shawn Michaels take it on Mankind, and then they cut through with a, you know, Tostitos commercial.
Yeah.
I'd be a little, or you're watching like Magnum and Tully and boom. You know, Pepsi commercial. Like, what? That didn't happen. I mean, I think they would really dilute their own content if they went that route.
Yeah, Dusty's being pummeled by Ole and Arn Anderson in the steel cage, and it's 2-on-1, and who's going to help him out? His tag team partner was in a car accident. Who could it be? It's KFC.
Oh, I hope that doesn't happen. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me, but I really hope that doesn't happen. I mean, but I think also going to the network as far as, you know, trying to be having premium content and trying to compete in the streaming world as far as, you know, Netflix, Hulu, HBO, and all the other content that's out there and all the other providers that are out there. One of the things, Jason, that is really becoming very popular are the entire season shows. And what I mean is, like, for example, House of Cards, Orange is the New Black.
Daredevil?
Daredevil coming up in May. When a new season of a show debuts that is done by Netflix, by Hulu, they don't just put one episode on a week. They put the entire season. Like, for example, Daredevil on Marvel Studios, that show is rumored to debut May 1st, 2015.
And
they're not going to just do one episode a week. They're going to put the entire season, boom, right away, so you can either watch it, and so you can watch it at your leisure, or you can binge watch it and watch the whole thing in one season, in one sitting, if you will. And for WWE, I think if they're going to start doing stuff like Legends House, like the Monday Night Wars, I think as they get more and more popular, they're going to have to start falling in line with the way content is released instead of doing, oh, next week at 8 o'clock on Tuesday, Monday Night Wars Part 4, they're going to have a whole docuseries, put it out there all at once. Say, here are all 10 episodes of this season, watch it at your leisure.
Yeah, I'm not 100%, I'm just old, so I just, you know, I'm not a fan of the idea of the binge-watching thing, but I mean, like I said, that's just me. That's just my taste.
No, I think there are some cons to it because, for example, I heard everybody on the planet tell me, you have to watch House of Cards, Atlee. House of Cards is an awesome show. You need to watch it. Kevin Spacey's amazing. Well, after a few months, I finally gave in. And it's if you have Netflix, you can watch seasons 1 and 2 with season 3 debuting in February 2015. And when you watch it, I after the first episode, I was hooked.
Oh, I mean, when it comes to having like old shows, and being able to go back, like I came to the world of Game of Thrones late.
Me too.
And during a period where I was unemployed, so I had more than enough time on my hands, and I just whipped through seasons 1 and 2, and I think 3 just before season 4 hit. So I mean that was all that. But I mean, as far as like the new seasons, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'd hate to have all 10 episodes of Game of Thrones right there and be done in a weekend.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think there are pros and cons to it, no matter how you slice it. I mean, if I watch, let's say, you know, they did season 1 of the Monday Night Wars, and they put all 10 episodes right away, and then you watch them all in one sitting, it's kind of, it's like It's gratifying, but sometimes you may get to that feeling where you go, what's next? You know, so I mean, the way that they do it, they're going to have to reevaluate that. But overall, the number is very disappointing, especially when you have 170 countries that thing is available in. But I hope at least the next investors call that it's increased. I think there will be an increase in the coming months when you get the Royal Rumble, when you get WrestleMania. I think there'll be an increase, but I think, you know, eventually they'll figure a way. I mean,
I think
the only
England and Canada, when those finally open up, I think that's gonna make a difference.
Well, Canada's there now. It's just England with that they gotta really
Canada,
get in there.
Canada, the network is an actual cable station, in a cable service that actually is not available to the entire country.
And it's funny because that's how WWE wanted to roll this thing out to begin with. They wanted to be a cable station, but it just didn't work out, and they're doing the streaming thing, which is the future. And I think you're right. Once, you know, England and Canada get this thing full on, it's going to increase numbers to a degree. But I really believe that this is a bad number, not a bad sign, but definitely a 731,000. They probably expect it to be higher. But I think it goes to show you that maybe there's too much content on television. I mean, you have a three-hour Raw that is a chore to watch most times. And then you have SmackDown, which is the B show. I mean, some good stuff happens on SmackDown, but it's the B show.
You don't have to watch it.
I mean, that's the thing. Before, you had what made SmackDown great was that you used to have to watch it. It was can't miss TV. Now it's not.
Oh.
I mean, the only thing that's can't miss TV to a degree is Raw. I mean, anything of consequence or importance happens on Raw.
I mean, I watched the main event all the time until the Flash happened, and now I had to choose the Flash or the main event. Well, there was no choice. Main event went bye bye.
Of course, because now it's on the network, so you can watch it whenever you want. But on top of that, it's the C show.
Oh yeah, and
you know?
And it should. I mean, I don't know. I remember back in the days where you had Superstars, which was an hour of enhancement matches, wrestling, an hour of enhancement matches with every other week or so. They'd have like a C level versus an A level, main event. Then you'd have Wrestling Challenge, which would be another set of enhancement matches, and then a recap of what happened on Superstars. But if you wanted to see quality stuff, then you either watched Saturday night's main event, you got one of the five pay per views, or Primetime Wrestling, which would feature the house show circuit.
Oh yeah, you watch the house shows. I'll go to the house shows if they have them in your area. Absolutely.
Oh, there was nothing like going to the Boston Garden.
Oh, those were some of the best shows. I mean, I was late to the Boston Garden party shows, but once I started going on a regular basis, you know, it was fun.
Oh,
my first
Boston Garden show, the main event was Hulk Hogan and Typhoon versus Earthquake and Dino Bravo. And it was a matinee show. It was right at the tail end of a snowstorm. And I mean, that was my first live experience of Hulkamania, and that was just oh my God, it was unbelievable.
Oh, good memories, Jason. Good memories. But we've been going here for over an hour and a half, so we're gonna definitely wrap things up here this evening. I think we've had a very good conversation about, you know, what's happening in professional wrestling and WWE and where they need to go with their network in order to ultimately succeed.
I want to leave things on a cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger.
I like cliffhangers.
Let's do
it. I'm going to pose a question to you. I am going to pose a question to our listeners.
Let's do it.
If there is an email that they can get back to us or what have you, I'm sure we'll include it somewhere.
The email they want to get back to us is bodyslampodcast@gmail.com. Again, bodyslampodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit us up on Twitter @BodySlamPodcast.
What he said. So my question to you, Atlee, and we'll discuss this next week, or at a future date, or what have you. And it's to everyone out there, past or present, alive or dead, anybody. You can use anybody. If you were to pick the ultimate Raw general manager, who would you pick and why? I have my answer, and but I'm not going to say it now. You've got to call my 900 number at 900. Oh, sorry.
$1.99 for the first minute, 99 cents for each additional minute. Parents, you need your parents' permission.
And let me.
I love it. I gotta think about that one. I'm gonna need some time to think about that one, Jason.
Yeah, it's something I've had this discussion with several people. Back there was a time that I was kind of helping book an action figure Fed online, and I had my own idea for a general manager, and they actually loved it and used it. So I'm going to stand by it, and I'm curious to see what you think. I'm curious to see whatever feedback that we would get on this, and I can't wait to give my story.
I love it. That'll be for the next episode of the Body Slam Podcast. We'll talk about the GM and all the news of professional wrestling, folks. If you want to keep your computer locked to Gerwick.net, that is GERWECK, for all your professional wrestling news, rumors, and reports. If you go to the Gerwick Report, which is at Gerwick.net, the webmaster himself, Steve Gerwick, and Frank D, they recently just did two great interviews, one with Jake the Snake Roberts and the other with the Honky Tonk Man. I listened to both of them. They are outstanding interviews. The Honky Tonk Man does not hold anything back. That man has an opinion on everything, and he ain't afraid to share it. Never has been. Frank D and Steve Gerwick, they are the podcast that tells it like it is, The Gerwick Report. Check it out at Gerwick.net. Folks, that's going to do it for another edition of the Body Slam Podcast. I'm Atlee Green.
I'm Jason Labonte.
Hey, we will see you next time on the Body Slam Podcast.